श्रीमद्भगवद्गीता की जय। गो प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि गो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। आद्वैष्टीय समुद्र की आद्वैष्टीय समुद्र की आद्वैष्टीय समुद्र की आद्वैष्ट श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग। So tonight we're going to do a verse from Bhagavad Gita. We'll follow our usual class format by chanting the verse together. Something else Prabhupada introduced in the very, very early days of ISKCON. Of course, Prabhupada was giving all the classes. Then eventually had his disciples giving class. Then he set a standard program every morning in his temples where we read it. We speak, one person speaks on Srimad Bhagavatam, and the format that Srila Prabhupada set up, he wanted us to understand something of what we were reading in the Sanskrit, actually. He wanted us to learn how to pronounce the Sanskrit properly. So he would have us chant the verses as we're going to do now, so we get some sense. Actually, one thing about Sanskrit, it's 100% phonetic. It's not like in India, excuse me, like in English, where you have B-U-T is but, but P-U-T is put. It's spelled the same way, but it's pronounced differently. In Sanskrit, if you see a short A, it's always pronounced the same way. If you see an A with a line under it, over it, it's always pronounced the same way. So once you learn how that's, you know, what these symbols mean, then it's actually pretty easy. You can just read what's there according to the the phonetic standard. In fact, Prabhupada had it printed in all of his books, pronunciation guide, so you can understand how to pronounce these. So we'll chant this verse. This is a very important verse in Bhagavad Gita. It's from the 4th chapter. Lord Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. This is text number 11. So sometimes we do word by word first and then line by line, but I'm going to go right into line by line and you can repeat. Ye yatamam prapadyante. Tangsataiva bhajamyam. Mama vartmanu vartante. Manushya partha sarvasha. Yeyatamam prapadyante. Tangsataiva bhajamyam. Mama vartmanu vartante. Manushya partha sarvasha. Sometimes when Prabhupada would listen to the chanting, at the end he would say, the girls are better. He would call us girls and boys because, of course, he was quite senior to all of his disciples at that time. So we were his girls and boys. So this verse, I'll just go to the translation. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. I'll explain a little something about the context of this, but I'll read the purport first. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. Actually, this word purport really means meaning. There's a Sanskrit word called tatparya, which is sometimes used in Sanskrit commentaries. And if you look up this word in the Sanskrit dictionary, one of the translations is purport. So purport means meaning, actually. So this is Prabhupada is explaining, what does this verse mean? Now, Prabhupada's explanations often, can be quite extensive. There are certain things that Prabhupada emphasized over and over again, and especially he emphasized the importance of the human form of life, not wasting our human form of life. We have a purpose. We have these human bodies. There's a purpose that we have. There's a reason that we have them, given to us by the Supreme Lord. And they're meant for us to make spiritual advancement, to understand the nature of reality, and especially spiritual reality, of which we are a part eternally. So this is Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Everyone is searching for Krishna in different aspects of His manifestations. So right away, you may say, what? But everyone is searching for Krishna, we just don't know it. Krishna is the source of everything good and everything attractive and admirable, everything we want. It comes from Krishna ultimately. So to continue, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahma Jyoti or effulgence, and as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. I think I'm going to make comments as I go along here, otherwise I'm going to forget some of these things. So these are all very important points. The Supreme Personality, of course, this phrase, Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's a little hard to unpack it. What it means is, it means God, is the kind of a fancy way to express it. Godhead means, can be taken in different ways. This word, this phrase is used, it's maybe not so much in our in modern times, but more earlier times it was more fashionable, I guess, to use the word Godhead rather than just God. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to emphasize that God is a person, and he's not just some impersonal force or light or something like that. He actually exists as a person. Of course, he doesn't have a human body like ours, a temporary material body. He has a spiritual body, but he is a person. So Prabhupada generally used this phrase to refer to God as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the person. So then Prabhupada says here, he's partially realized in his impersonal Brahma Jyoti or effulgence. And as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. The Prabhupada here is referring to an important verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As I was explaining, every morning we have class on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's one of the Puranas, one of the 18 Puranas, which are sometimes called the historical literature from the Vedic tradition. So an extremely important verse in the second chapter of the first canto, there are 12 cantos, and in the second chapter of the first canto, there is this verse, Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. So this verse is an explanation or definition of what the absolute truth is. Absolute truth in Sanskrit is usually referred to as Brahman or Brahma. So what is that? And it's defined in a literature called the Vedanta Sutra, which is the summary of the Upanishads, which are the most philosophical parts of the Vedic literature. So in a summary and commentary on the Upanishads, it said that the absolute truth is that from which everything comes. If you trace back and back and back and back, you come to a person ultimately. You don't come to a singularity, as is the scientific explanation today. Actually, you know, it's interesting that, because when we hear there was this explosion, you know, everything came out of nothing, or everything was condensed somehow into an infinite energy was condensed into an infinitesimally small size. Already your brain goes, what? Anyway, the natural question was, well, what happened before that explosion took place? So the scientific answer is, there was no before. That's when time began. So in spiritual circles, spiritualists are often criticized for being too esoteric and hard to understand and so on, but that's certainly something that, how can you get your brain around that? There was no time before that. Well, naturally we think, well, it had to be some time the explosion took place. But that's not the way it's explained. So anyway, the absolute truth is that from which everything comes. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. This is from another literature called the Brahma Samhita, where it said that Krishna is the cause of all causes. He's the original cause. Sometimes people, they say, well, God created. Well, who created God? Well, nobody created God. The definition is, nobody created him. He's always been, and he always will be. So he's a person, that source of everything, but he has other aspects of himself. And besides his person, his form, his spiritual form, he has rays, like an aura, just like there are people who can read auras, right? They can look and see, oh, this person's sick, I can see this dark color here, whatever. This person's really a good person because of their shiny aura and so on. And sometimes we actually have an experience, we just to be in the presence of someone, we think, wow, this person is really powerful, or this person has magnetism or charisma, so their aura. So God has an aura too, it's called the Brahmajyoti. It's usually described as his rays, just like the rays of the sun. So God has rays too. And sometimes people see, some people think that that's the ultimate, to see those rays or to see the light. Right? We hear this in spiritual circles. People want to see the light. But this light is coming from the person, just like the sunlight is coming from the sun globe. So there's this is what Srila Prabhupada is referring to here. He says that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. It is partially realized in his impersonal Brahma Jyotir effulgence. It's called Brahma Jyotir. So Brahma means spiritual, you can say. And Jyoti means light, or also effulgence. So he says Brahma Jyotir effulgence. So that's an aspect of him. So when you realize that, if you can see that light, of course that's a wonderful thing. Just to see the light from God is something. It's better than being in darkness, obviously. Just like in the morning, when especially if you're afraid of the dark, like your children are, they really welcome the light. When the light comes up in the morning, you can see everything. What a difference it makes when the sun comes up, or even before it's up, when you just see the light, then it changes everything. Fear goes away. So there are certain advantages and certain happiness, actually, bliss that comes even from recognizing to being associated with that light. That's called the Brahma Jyoti or effulgence. So that's also an aspect of God. And then the other thing mentioned here is the all-pervading super soul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. So this idea is that there's God in the spiritual world, in his eternal spiritual kingdom, and he has activities there. In that context, he's given the name or the title Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who possesses all the bhaga. Bhaga means opulences. So everything, beauty, wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, and renunciation, are usually these six are usually listed, major categories, you can say. So all beauty, all wealth, and so on. The reservoir of all those things, that's God. And he exists eternally in the spiritual world with his associates, of course. He has eternal associates there. But he also comes into this material world. Now, one thing about God is that he can reproduce himself without losing anything of himself. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. So this is a famous verse from several of the Upanishads, and it explains this principle that God can never be diminished. As Prabhupada used to say, just like in mathematics, 1 minus 1 usually equals 0, but in spiritual mathematics, 1 minus 1 is still 1. Because Krishna can reproduce himself an infinite number of times. Everything God does, he can do infinitely. Our brains can't comprehend. We can't come to the end of how glorious and great and inconceivable he is with his powers. So this is one aspect of him, that he can reproduce himself. He can be in two places at the same time. We can't do that. God can do that. And he's fully operational. In fact, he's not just in two places at the same time. He's in unlimited number of places at the same time. So in the spiritual world, he has an innumerable, unlimited number of spiritual planets where he enjoys with his devotees in different ways. The same Krishna, but he's in all these different places at the same time. But also he comes to the material world. But he is in what we call an expansion of himself. And those are called Vishnus or Narayan forms of the Lord. While they're in a certain section of the spiritual world, but there's also in the material world, they're called the Purushas. They're also called Vishnus. Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and Chirodakshayi Vishnu. So I won't get into the details of that, but there are different forms of God. In fact, what Prabhupada is referring to here is the all-pervading super soul dwelling within everything. So there's a super soul for each universe. They're just like in our bodies, go back to the very basics, we're the soul within this body. But and within this body, there's also Parama. We're called Atma. The Sanskrit word is Atma. So within the body, there's also Paramatma. Param means supreme. So that's God within our heart. So people have this conception in other religious traditions that yes, God is with me. God is in my heart. People have some. In fact, sometimes it's explained that what we see is conscience. That's God speaking to us. No, you shouldn't do that. That's God within the heart telling you, or you should do that. You should do the good things and avoid the bad things. So God is there. So he's present within each of us, accompanying us as we travel in this world. Of course, Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic literature in general explains that this body is not one. We don't just have one lifetime and then die and that's it. But we go from body to body until we're ready to be with Krishna. We have to be 100% purely devoted to God. Then we can live in God's association. Otherwise, we don't belong here, really, because that's what happens in the spiritual world. Everyone is praising God all the time, trying to please Him. So if you don't want to do that, then you don't have to go there. That's why we're here, actually, because we don't really want to go. We have to practice, we have to bring ourselves to the position of really wanting to go to Krishna and serve Krishna. In other words, love Krishna. We have to learn to love Krishna, become lovers of Krishna. So in any case, as Prabhupada is referring to here, the all-pervading super soul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. So he's within the heart of every living being, not just human beings, but every living thing. The super soul is there because the soul is there. Wherever the soul goes in its different incarnations, if you can say, in this world, in our different lifetimes, whether it be human or plant or animal, God is there present, accompanying, always inviting us to join Him. So these three aspects, these are God, the Supreme Person, God's effulgence or His energy that pervades everything, actually. That light is the basis, the foundation of everything. And then God within the heart, the super soul of each individual and the super soul of the universe also. He's the creator of this universe. In fact, and we can safely say that in other religious traditions, generally the idea is to understand God as the creator, because we don't hear about what He does. That's sort of His job. But when He goes to work, He stays home too. Unfortunately, we can't do that. But Krishna in the spiritual world, He stays home and plays all day. Right? He's the CEO that's got other managers and He can just play golf or whatever He wants to do. So Krishna enjoys eternally. He's the supreme enjoyer. That's the definition of God. Why should He work? Why should He even create? He doesn't have to do it. If He wants to create, then He creates, in a sense, you might say all these forms are eternal, but He creates another form of Himself. Now you go to work today. You do go and do the creation. So that's the super soul, that's Paramatma. So Krishna in the spiritual world, he just enjoys all the time. That's what He does. So generally when we think of God, we think of the creator. That's the greatest thing. He's the creator. But a creator is a job. Or maybe He's the judge, which is another job, which is actually a really boring job. I had to serve on jury duty one time for a violent crime case, and I went on for a couple of days, and I thought, this poor judge has to sit here all day long and listen to this tedious testimony and questioning, and has to give the same instructions over and over and over again to the jury. And poor. It's considered a big thing to be a judge, but I thought, I wouldn't want to do this all day long. So God doesn't have to just judge all day long, damning this person or letting this person through the pearly gates or whatever. That's for His expansion in the material world. So these three aspects, I was just trying to explain, because the context of what Prabhupada's purport here is about this. Because it says here, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And we'll see as Prabhupada is explaining, he's talking about those who are actually after these different aspects of God. There are those who are attracted to this white light. There are those who are attracted, you can say, to the Creator, to the Lord within the heart. And then there are those who are attracted to having pure love for God, Bhagavan, Krishna, and the spiritual world. And he rewards them according to how they approach him. So let me go on here. I haven't gotten very far in this purport. Let's see. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. So there are the other two aspects you may be able to get some realization of without being a pure devotee of Krishna. But if you want to be with Krishna in the spiritual world, and who wouldn't want to be? Look at Radha Krishna, how beautiful. Krishna Balaram, Gaurdita. That's where we want to go. That's why this is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Someone suggested in the beginning that Prabhupada name his society the International Society for God Consciousness. Said people in the West would be able to take it a little better. Prabhupada said, no, this is Krishna Consciousness. Our aim is for Krishna. We want to go to Krishna. We know who God is. We know where he lives, Prabhupada used to say. We know his phone number. We know his address. We know exactly where he lives. Okay, so consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, whether they know it or not, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as Supreme Master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for him. So, maybe the sentence, next sentence is also connected, but I just want to see if you follow this point. So there are three aspects of God, and you can be attracted to one or the other. So you can, as I said, you can be attracted to the light, you can be attracted to the Creator, the Lord in the heart, or you can be attracted to Krishna. And there also you have a choice on how to approach him, how to serve him, or how to reciprocate with him. And whatever your desire is to approach him and whatever relationship you want to have with him, he will respond to that. If you want him to be like a father, fatherly figure, he'll act like a father. If you want him to be like your child, he'll be your child. If you want him to be your buddy, your friend, he'll be your friend. All of these options are available. Of course, you have to qualify yourself. It's not so easy, right? To be God's friend, just imagine. You may want to be, I don't know, some movie star's friend. You know, to certain people, they become so fanatical about wanting somebody's association, somebody, they break into their house or whatever, because of they're so attracted to having a relationship with this particular person. So it's a kind of fanaticism. But the heart, we have ultimately with the deepest longing within our heart is to be with Krishna. Ultimately, we love Krishna. We just have forgotten, actually, somehow or other. And it's a kind of insanity, actually. We're all insane. And we're hallucinating that this is, you know, there's a little bit of pleasure in this material world, but there isn't. There's a little relief from distress once in a while. There's a nice example in one of our books. It says, the happiness in the material world, they used to have a punishment where they would put someone on a board, you know, over a river, and then dunk them down into the water until the person was practically dead, and then they'd raise them up. Then the person would gasp for air. They'd be very happy at that moment, right? I'm not drowning anymore. So that's the explanation of what material life is like. Generally, we're always worried about this or that, and anxiety, and so many kinds of miseries happen to us. But that's not real happiness. Real happiness is in love, actually. Happiness comes from association. It comes from love. That's really, the two are really synonymous. Love and happiness. Ananda, we have this term, Ananda. Krishna is full of Ananda. He's Ananda Swarup. That means his very form is happiness or bliss or also love. Sometimes it's translated, this word is translated as love. Love and happiness. Say God is love, right? So he is, actually. So we want to connect with him. So the point here is that Krishna will exchange also. You also have your options in how you can approach him, and he will reciprocate spiritually. So he says here, let's see. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there. They are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshipers. So he's saying, just like in the material world, we have different relationships. And even the same person plays different roles, right? A person can be a father, and a person can be a husband, and a person can be a cousin, a person can be a CEO, a person can be a judge, and so many things we can have. So we don't have to put God into one box. He's just this. He's just the judge. That's it. No, he reciprocates according to the longing in our heart. So that's what Prabhupada says. We see the relationships in this world, so they're present in the spiritual world. One point Prabhupada would always make is that anything that we have here, it's available or exists purely in the spiritual world, because that's the origin. That's where it all comes from. So unless it exists there, at least in principle, it's not here in this world. So how, otherwise the spiritual world would be inferior to the material world, but how can that be? Or God would be. If God can only play one role, but we can play a half a dozen roles, that means we're better than God. He's stuck in being a judge and he can't do anything else. No, he can be whatever he wants to be. In fact, he comes to this world repeatedly in different forms. You may have heard of Krishna's avatar. Sometimes he even comes in animal forms because he wants to play. Just like kids play dress-up, right? So Krishna plays dress-up. He comes as an actor and he plays different roles. Because, for different reasons, one thing is that when God does something, he accomplishes many things at the same time. He satisfies so many devotees, but he's also enjoying himself doing that. Especially he's enjoying by satisfying others. What's more pleasing than making somebody else happy? Just like sometimes people want to be comedians, right? Because they like to see people laugh. It makes them happy. If you see other people laugh when you tell a joke, then you feel happy about it. So you're enjoying because you're making other people happy. So Krishna's greatest happiness actually comes from pleasing his devotees. We always say that Krishna is the greatest of everything. So he's also the greatest friend, the greatest lover. He gives the greatest reciprocation. And he's also the greatest servant. We're meant to be servants of God. We're subordinate to him. This whole world is forcing us to be servants, whether we like it or not. We're forced to grow old. We're forced to die. We're serving Krishna, God in his form of material nature. But because we're servants by nature. But Krishna, God, when he serves, then no one can outdo him. Of course, when he comes in his different forms also, he sometimes demonstrates that. What a great devotee of God, God himself can be when he plays that role. So let me go on here. He says, as for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. So this goes back to the main point of the verse. As they approach me, I respond. So there are those who want to, God probably calls it spiritual suicide. The idea of this light is that you can merge into this light. And you don't become the light, but you more or less forget your own identity, your own sense of self. Each of us has a personal, individual sense of identity. It's not that we are that one everything. That doesn't happen. You don't become God or become Brahman. We're always tiny, infinitesimal particles of individual consciousness. And that we experience that in this as we change our body, even in this lifetime. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita. I was a baby, I was a little boy, I was a teenager, so on. All these different bodies I've had, they're not there anymore, but I'm still here, and I remember things. That means I was there somehow or other. So that's the soul within the body, that individual soul, and that goes on. It always, and even in, when there's liberation from this material world, that individuality remains. So Prabhupada says there are those who don't want that. They want to actually lose their sense of individuality, emerge into, it's called merging, sayujya mukti. So Krishna awards them that. If that's what they want, by approaching him, because there are those who actually worship Krishna with that aim in mind. They have some incomplete idea of what God is or who God is. Maybe they think that this is some temporary, Krishna's very, maybe temporary. This is a temporary form, but he's very powerful, and he can help me merge into the white light if I worship him. So that's their goal, actually. So Prabhupada is explaining here. If that's your goal, Krishna says, okay, yaya tamam prapajante tans tataya vijamyaham. As they surrender to me, if that's what they want, then I'll give them that. He says, such impersonals do not agree to accept the eternal blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Now, this is an important point about bliss. The highest bliss is attained by in association with Krishna. There's some bliss in associating with the Creator. There's some bliss in merging. But the highest bliss, infinitely more blissful than anything else, is in God's association. Some of them who are not firmly situated, even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. So there are those who make some progress towards that light. They may have some realization of it, but they get bored, basically, is what happens. Because they don't serve Krishna. You have to do something. The soul is active by nature. You can't just float eternally. You want to swim in the nectar. You want to dive in service in the nectar of service to serving Krishna. So there are those who get some glimpse of the Brahman, Brahma Jyoti, but then they come back into the material world, which they've condemned. They know the material world is not where it's at. They have to get to spiritual. So they get into some aspect of spirit, but because there's no activity there, they come back down. So they are, so I'll consider it, let's see. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, this is a phrase you'll find throughout Prabhupada's books. Fruitive workers means someone who wants to get something out of this material world, basically. You have a desire for something and you work to get it. That's called a fruitive worker. In Krishna, much of the Bhagavad Gita is explaining why you need to get rid of those desires if you want spiritual realization. You have to stop wanting things from this world, basically. Understanding that everything will be fulfilled. All your desires will be fulfilled. Your core satisfaction will come only from spiritual realization. So he says here, for those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Yagyeshwar. So this would take some explaining, but the basic idea is that in traditional Vedic culture, people perform sacrifices to satisfy their material desires. So the sacrifice is called yajna, and yajneshwar means the Lord as the Lord of sacrifice. He rewards what people are trying to get through their sacrifices. And then he says, and those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. So this comes from Krishna also. You may see, I'm sure, all over the internet, probably you can find yogis doing all kinds of incredible things. So they get those powers also come from Krishna. They're really just a byproduct of yoga. Yoga is really meant, just like Ashtanga yoga, Hatha yoga, it's meant to connect with God. But along the way, because you're getting purified, you may get some mystic powers. But these are all explained in the Vedic literature, certain things you can do, which seem impossible, like walking on water or whatever, different kinds of things you can do. So Krishna grants those. If that's really what you want by worshipping him, okay. Krishna is sometimes described as a desire tree. It's a tree that gives whatever fruit you approach it for. He'll give you an apple, a pear, a plum, or whatever, a pomegranate. He'll give you mystic power. He'll give you merging. He'll give you his association according to your desire and according to your spirit, your practices, spiritual or material. So a little bit more of this purport. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone. And all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10, in the second canto, third chapter, text number 10. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara dihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one is without desire, the condition of devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. Of course, Prabhupada is promoting, proposing, propagating Krishna consciousness. And which means, of course, spiritual, ultimately, as was being explained. His magazine is called Back to Godhead. We want to go to Krishna. That's our goal. But whatever your goal is, this verse says, you can worship God or worship Krishna, and he'll give it to you. But what will happen is that eventually you'll start realizing, wow, really what I really want is Krishna himself. That's really what I want. As you learn more about how wonderful Krishna is, all his glories, once you become convinced of his situation, he's not just some arbitrary thing that we say, well, let's just make Krishna God. No, there's a very long tradition. There's thousands, literally thousands of different books of the Vedic literature that all ultimately point to Krishna. The whole thousands, or we would say, according to the Vedic literature, millions of years of civilization, Indian civilization especially, which is still, at least some of it is still there after all these millennia. The foundation of it all is worship of Krishna. So what he says lasts, just like this book, Bhagavad Gita. It's thousands of years old, and still it's around. It's maybe not right now on the New York Times bestseller list, but whatever's on the New York Times bestseller list is not going to be there very long. It's not going to be up there for 5,000 years. You can count on that. So Krishna's book is still studied, and it's been studied by the greatest intellects. And when the West first heard about it, they were amazed, actually. These like Emerson and Thoreau and Schopenhauer, these different philosophers during the 1800s, they were amazed, actually. 1700s, 1800s, they were first getting translations of the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. They were amazed how much depth of wisdom there was there. So Bhagavad Gita is a condensed. Krishna is giving the essence in the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada is making it very... Bhagavad Gita is not so easy. We tend to say it's like the first book. Start with Bhagavad Gita. There's so many others. But it's not an easy book to understand. But Prabhupada has presented it in such a way that he has made it accessible to us in modern times. It's not easy to take something in Sanskrit and put it into English. We don't actually have English words to explain a lot of the deep philosophical and spiritual concepts that are there. But Prabhupada was very careful to explain things in a simpler way. Recently, I've been reading commentaries of previous teachers in our line, Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. They lived like in the 1700s. So their approach is quite different, actually. They use a lot of technical terminology that would be very hard for us to grasp. The Prabhupada has presented it in a way that we can benefit from us. And of course, we should. Everyone should read it. Read it every day. Read it as much as you can. And you'll see the difference. You'll get a taste of Krishna by reading his words. Krishna is present in the sound. That's one aspect of God also. He's present everywhere where he's being discussed. He's present in his name, he's present in the literature, he's present in his recorded words in Bhagavad Gita. So we get his association in that way. And that's purifying to the heart. By doing that, we're nourishing our attraction. We're trying to awaken that attraction, spontaneous attraction to Krishna, which we should have, but we don't have. But if we associate with him in the ways that he's given us, then we can become qualified, actually, in some sense, to have his, we'll attract his mercy, I can say, we'll attract his grace, and then he'll want to have us. That's what we're trying to do. Okay, I went a little long here. Anyone like to ask anything or make any comment? Ganga Narayana Prabhu. This devotee, Ganga Narayana Das, when I joined this temple in San Francisco in 1974, he was one of the residents of the San Francisco temple. He's my senior godbrother.
But this was a great class. But that's not what I... Something... Srila Prabhupada was so... His mission was to basically destroy impersonalism and establish personalism. And every time I hear this one phrase, I don't understand. Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha, the chit potency, says that Krishna's existence rests on it. Can you give some explanation of what that means? Because it seems diametrically opposite to, you know, Prabhupada's preaching strategy.
So he's referring to, Krishna is always referred to as Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So his form is literally, it's said that he's made of this. So Sat means eternity. So you can say it means that he's eternal. You might think, well, what does it mean to be made of eternity? But it means that he's eternal. And Chit means, it actually, Prabhupada usually translated it as knowledge, but it actually means consciousness. It's not knowledge like knowledge in a book or knowing something, like knowing how many, you know, mosquitoes there are in the world or whatever. That kind of data, you might say. That's not what knowledge is about. Knowledge means Advaya Gyan, non-dual knowledge. This verse I quoted from about the three aspects of God. It says that God is non-dual knowledge, but knowledge there means consciousness. So consciousness. So Sat, Chit, and then the third thing is Ananda. Ananda, as I was saying, he's love. It's God is love, or God is happiness. God is bliss. So you're saying that the phrase is that. Now I would say that Krishna is the foundation. You can say. Now, one thing is, there's a lot, everything about God is inconceivable, ultimately, when you get down to it. The greatest philosopher in our line is called Jiva Goswami. His name is Jiva Goswami. He came just shortly after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was here, 500 years ago. And he said, unless you accept in principle that you cannot be able to understand everything about God, then you'll never be able to really appreciate, you might say, or have some understanding of God. Because there are going to be things you just can't grasp. He's God. Right? It's like, how can children understand the relationship of their parents, for example, and conjugal relationship? They can't. So our consciousness only goes so far. So there are some things that it's hard to explain, because we hear, you know, it sounds sometimes like there's some foundation to Krishna. But Krishna is the foundation of everything, and he operates in inconceivable ways. So he has a representative of the cognitive aspect of himself, which is Lord Baladev, actually. And he himself is the Sat, is that right? No, I get it wrong. No, Krishna is Chit. And Lord Balaram is the Sat feature. Sat also means existence. So Balaram, who is Balaram on the altar here, on the right altar, the white personality, is Krishna's brother, Balaram. So he is the actual source of everything. As I was saying, Krishna creates creators, so he creates, in a sense, expands himself. He has exact as much power as Krishna has. But from Balaram come all the other features, and he's the one who creates, we have to put that in quotes because it's eternal, but in a sense, you can say the spiritual world and the material world. So Krishna, in a sense, he subsists or exists in that spiritual atmosphere, and that's created by or overseen by or personified by Lord Balaram. And then ultimately, then there's also the Ananda aspect. That's Srimati Radharani, which is Krishna's consort or his girlfriend. She is the personification of that. So all the energies in the spiritual world are actually persons. So there's the person of the girl next to Krishna. She's actually personified love of Krishna, you can say, and also personified happiness and personified service to him. Actually, she presents all the service to Krishna. We have to please her, ultimately. To get to Krishna, you have to go through her. Not through her, but you have to get her mercy. Prabhupada described her also as the compassionate side of Krishna. It's not that Krishna's not compassionate, but she's especially compassionate. Because she loves Krishna so much, she wants to bring everyone to Krishna. So even more than Krishna wants us more. She wants to bring us to Krishna. So these are different energies, you can say, of Krishna, how he expands it. These things can get very detailed and complicated. And there are books written by the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explaining these things.
So in other words, it's explaining a protocol rather than there's something superior to Krishna. It's
yeah,
just
there's
a protocol of how he appears through Baladeva.
Yeah, Krishna, right. He operates in different ways, and one of the ways, you know, he assigns tasks to others, and he also takes advantage of them. Now, one of the things that's amazing about God is he forgets himself, actually. How can God forget? But he wants to forget sometimes because he wants to enjoy in a certain way. So, for example, he plays like a little baby with his mother, and he wants to, just like you sometimes in theater or movies, the person lost themselves in the part. You say, this person became Napoleon or whoever they're playing in the play. They lost themselves in the part. So Krishna, he wants to be like a little baby to his mother. So she's chasing him around with a stick because he's been naughty. And he's actually afraid, actually. He's crying. Tears are coming. He has mascara on his eyes. He's rubbing his eyes and the black stuff's getting all over his face. And it said that he's actually afraid. Because and what does he do? You think, well, if God is acting like a baby, how can everything go on? Well, as I was explaining, he has so many agents. They take care of everything. So he has agents that when he wants to lose himself in a role, everything can be choreographed by others. And he can do that. Why not? He can do everything. He can do whatever he wants to do. If he wants to forget that he's God, because if it impedes, it's all ultimately, the highest truth is about God and his devotees, their exchange. So anything that impedes that, then Krishna wants to put that aside. So if he wants to do it, he can do it. He can do what's impossible, you might say. So he can to get into the role fully, fully absorb himself, because what is he doing? He's reciprocating with his mother. His mother wants to love God in that way. She wants to control him and take care of him and feel that if I don't take care of him, he's going to die. If I don't feed him, he's going to starve. And she has such intense love. It's a spiritual platform, the highest spiritual platform, that Krishna reciprocates. He allows her to do that. So all of his devotees and expansions, they're all Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasa Britya. It's explained. Everyone is thinking Krishna is the only controller. Even though others have infinite power, they're also thinking Krishna's at the top and I'm his servant. So everyone, and sometimes their roles are quite amazing, as I'm saying. They supersede Krishna in his what we call lila or pastimes. As I was saying before, his only business is enjoying. So he doesn't have time to go to work and create the world because he has too many ideas, right? All the things I'm going to do today to have fun. That's God. Why not? Right? Wouldn't we all like that? Just to have the leisure time to do whatever we want? We can go to work if we want. Yeah, some people like that. Most of us don't, though. It's Memorial Day weekend. I was downtown yesterday, dead. The streets are dead because everyone's traveling somewhere, trying to enjoy. Everyone's looking forward to the vacation. So Krishna is the vacationer. One time Prabhupada said, Krishna's the laziest man in Vrindavan. He doesn't want to work. He doesn't have to work. Of course he does. He takes care of the cows. But taking care of the cows is just play for him. He just basically plays. That's all he does. He plays all day long. Why not? He's God. Why should he work? Okay, I guess we should stop here. Unless someone has an urgent question. All right, can take prasadam. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.